So, Jimmy, you went to Las Vegas and you sent us some videos of one of the crazier things I've ever seen.
Yeah, I just went and saw the Grateful Dead experience at the Sphere. Rachel and I went. Her birthday is in May, and I'm going to be traveling. So, as a gift, I said, pick one of the Grateful Dead shows between all of my trips and we'll go. So, we just went to Vegas, even though it's a month before her birthday. And the Sphere experience is incredible. And it's funny, there's like people that are in the Sphere cult, because I'll bring it up to certain people and like, oh, I saw that. It's incredible. But like they haven't been like you never bragged about it. They're like, no, I just like, you know. It's funny how people have talked to a few people that have been there and they're like,
There's like an
oh,
underground network of people who like the same
it's
thing.
yeah. There was just such an incredible experience. Now, imagine a widescreen TV, right? And then they started making these TVs that are cupped or curved. You started seeing them. The only place I see TVs is in Walmart, where you see the big giant curved TV in Walmart. It's like maybe 80 inches across. And now imagine that TV is completely wrapped around your head. Completely. And it's 200 feet away in every direction, maybe more. And the experience that you could feel when all of a sudden the screen turns into you're floating through space. And you feel like you're going to topple out of your seat because all of a sudden the so-called spaceship you're in is turning in space and you feel things moving over your head. It was just such an incredible, submersive, fully immersive experience. And the visuals were just incredible. And they did a real fake out. And I'm going to ruin this for people that haven't been there yet. So when you see the sphere in the sunlight, you could see through it and you could really see that it's a ball inside of another ball. And the ball inside is the theater and the ball outside is the big giant television that they project images on. So the inner sphere and the outer sphere, you could see a little airspace between them that's somewhat inconsistent. So when you come into the theater and you sit down and you look up at the giant globe before the show starts, it is all scaffolding. And it looks like you're looking like what you could see in the sunlight through the two different spheres on the exterior. You're inside, and they have almost like a, you could see images on the outside. So you feel like you're looking through the TV screen, and you could see ghost shadows of what you assume is playing on the outside sphere while you're on the inside sphere.
Oh.
And you're like, and I'm like, whoa, this is so cool. You could see the inner workings of this thing. It's great. And then the first song comes on. And they project, they video project John Mayer and Bob Weir and the guys on this big image of what looks like scaffolding. And you're like, oh, I guess that's cool. You could still see through their image. You could see the scaffolding and stuff. And you're like, it looks like almost like a video projection where you can still see the wall texture behind it. And I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool. I heard this is going to be really insane, but I'm like, I guess that's cool. You know, you could still see a giant image of Bob Weir, but you could see the scaffolding behind him. I'm like, I guess that's as good as it's going to get. So that's song one. And then it cuts down, you know, everyone's like, it's like their warm up. And then the lights go down. And then all of a sudden, the scaffolding starts moving. And that's the video I sent you guys, I think, where the scaffolding slowly starts spinning around you. Like half of it goes left, half of it goes right. And you look up, and there's this other big giant scaffolding that's in the sky as like kind of the hub of the big spinning mechanism. And as the what's interesting is as the scaffolding splits, it creates a lightning bolt, the Grateful Dead steely lightning bolt. And then all of a sudden you realize the scaffolding isn't real because they're not going to
That's
have the lightning
awesome.
bolt shape on every for every show. And the scaffolding spins completely away and exposes this like perfectly smooth TV screen. That just pulls you in, and then you're submerged into the TV screen the whole time. The scaffolding was a complete fake out. There is no
That's awesome.
scaffolding that you could see. You can't gently see through the inside of the dome to the projections that are showing on the outside on any given moment. It was all fake, which is really, really, I was totally duped. In the video I sent you guys, you hear me talking. I'm like, yeah, that's the scaffolding from the inside. Then all of a sudden it disappears. Like, what's happening? Where is it going? It's
The
just gone.
resolution and the depth is so good that it looks real.
Yeah. It's so, and then they have these like lights behind it. So you can't tell if there's like pin lights as if like scaffolding utility lights. You can't tell
Oh,
if you're
yeah.
looking at an image of that or if there's really a light. It looks like it's just so well done.
Huh.
So well done. It's just unbelievable. What an experience. I know we talked about how they're going to try and make these in every city, but I don't know if that's going to happen.
Yeah. I was curious about the sound. So it's a big ball.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's no flat, I would assume, there's no flat.
No, nothing.
Big walls, no flat ceiling. Does it sound like the... Does it sound like the audio is coming from everywhere, or can you see it? Is it like coming from the stage?
It's funny, you know, like when like you go to like a heavy metal show, which I used to go to all the time, you see a giant wall of Marshall amps.
Yeah.
And it feels like it's coming directly from the Marshall amps, even though maybe it's coming from inside the whole entire theater. But in general, you see the video I sent you, they're all just standing on a stage and there's a couple of amps behind them. And I guess those amps are mic'd. But there's not a wall of Marshalls. You know, that's not the type of show that is. But the music just completely surrounds you, and it sounds great. Hmm. You know, the crystal clear mix. It's great. It's great. But I didn't see – there's no racks of speakers anywhere, which is interesting. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, I mean, they've got to be – they could be like under the seats and behind the panels and stuff. But creating audio that works everywhere in a big sphere is probably a really big problem to overcome.
Then they did the drum solo, and Mickey Hart is playing, and he played this big timpani, and the whole room rumbled. Mm. It was funny. He was kind of like playing, because he knew like everybody's seat was rumbling, and he was playing with it. It was almost kind of funny. He was kind of playing with the audience. But the amount of bass that the room took up without any crackle, I couldn't believe it. How clear the bass was. You know, usually bass is the test of the system because you hear a crackle. And, you know, nothing vibrated in the room. It's just like you just felt it in your full body.
Crazy.
Yeah. So it was good. It was a good experience. And looking at all, just if you guys haven't been to Vegas, it's fun. Just we bounced around and went to all the different casinos and won $150 on slot machines. Listen, yeah, I don't want to brag, but.
But I am.
And we were paying the penny slots. Here's a pro tip. We walked around, and just as a joke, we just started slapping the payout buttons on all these machines, and one of them spit out 65 cents. It spit out a ticket for 65 cents. There's no coins in it. You could stick a dollar, but then everything's turned into these computer screens and these tickets, which is kind of sad because I've been there when you win on a slot machine, it starts spitting change out. It's this big ta-da. And now it just spits out a ticket. So you cash out and get a ticket, and the ticket's as good as cash. So we slapped one of the things, and it spit out 65 cents. So we went to the penny slots and ran that up to like $50 and then ran it all the way back down to nothing. Because I just said, let's just keep trying. And we just got the ticket for nothing. So it was fun. We had a good time. And it was in and out. We flew in. Did the show, had a couple dinner, went to a comedy club, and then on Friday night, went to the show Saturday night, Sunday, flew home. Now I'm back in action. Cool. And I'm just preparing. I'm going to start working on a Lincoln Electric video. I'm making a vintage side table for the leather shop because I find I have all these bits and bobs and weights and things, and every time I want to lay out leather, I end up putting all that stuff on the floor under the table. So I'm going to make a little side table where I could put my weights, and it's kind of like a tool layout section. That's not the tabletop, because you find yourself always like flipping out a whole piece of fabric and I'm kicking razor blades and stuff off the table so that I can keep the table completely free of any tools. I'm making a little side table, but it's going to be in a vintage style. It's going to look like an industrial like factory table. So I'm going to start working on that today. That's my work for the week. And the Cadillac's coming along. I just posted a video last week. I got the rear fenders on, which was a big hurdle for me. And the rear fenders are going to really allow me to begin to put the side panels on and start really defining. I'll send you guys a picture. I was dreaming yesterday with a couple of strips of wood where and how the body panels will be defined. So I'm going to start. That's going to start kicking into second gear. And then a lot of people asking about a house video. I haven't put a video out on the house in 6 months, but a lot has taken place. I had to replace the whole floor, and I've shown bits and pieces of it on Patreon, but the video's coming soon. Definitely at a point now where I have enough content. And it was slow going through the winter. It was very cold. The house is in a 180-acre field with no trees. So it's really tough to work over there in the winter. You're exposed to the elements 100%. And the 180 acres is my neighbor. I'm like a little 2 acre island on my neighbor's property of 180 acres, just big open grass field. So it's rough. So I don't spend too much time over there when it's 10 degrees out.
I have to say, I'm pretty jealous about how quickly you're moving on the Cadillac and how quick that's coming together. I was telling you guys before we started recording that I put out the next Ghia video today or yesterday. And like, you know, one of the comments was like, why don't you ever actually make any progress on this? It's not moving along. And that's after watching the video, because I made such a small change within the video, even though it took me like 2 weeks to get out there and or a week and a half to like, you know, cut things away, measure them, figure out how to put things back in, get them all lined up, put them back in. And it's such a small little area of focused work. It doesn't feel to me like it's making a lot of progress. And then when you have somebody else say that, it's like, well, yeah, I know. We're over here, Jimmy's like, I'm just going to rebuild the whole back of this thing and make it out of wood. No big deal. Just going to get it done. Yeah.
Well, there is a...
I'm glad to see it come along. I'm joking.
No, but honestly, Bob, there is a sense of freedom with this build, because there's no rules. You know, you want to make sure your car looks like it's supposed to look, because you're restoring a vintage sports car. There's no rules here. I can be like, you know what? And what's bugging me about this is the roof is too wide, because I made the roof go straight back. Because all of the Woodies that I've seen has a perfectly straight back roof. It's as wide in the front as it is in the back, so kind of like a truck. So I'm like, oh, that gives me some freedom. So I did the roof, and it goes as wide in the front as wide in the back. But then I put the fenders on, and the fenders are 6 inches skinnier on both sides. So now the roof's going to have to taper down.
Oh.
Or I'm going to have to figure out a way to modify the roof. And I came up with a couple of compromises, which will be fine. I'm going to steal a little bit of space off of the fender so that I'm a little closer to the taillight versus just leaving all the metal exposed. Anyway, these are details I'll talk about in the video. But I have the freedom to make all those choices. And that makes it a little bit different. Go ahead, Dave.
A question for both of you. Bob, do you see the work on the car as a hobby? And Jimmy, do you see the work on the car as a hobby or just part of what you do?
No, I think it's for me, always wanting to work on cars like this has been an obsession. And like I said, I kind of had a breakthrough when I found this type of car, where freedom to just experiment is the fun part, versus adhering to the perfect dynamics of like if I was going to restore the Mercedes, I couldn't put a wooden panel on the Mercedes. I'd have to be blasphemy. This car is already destroyed, so if I destroy it anymore, it won't matter.
But coming from a content, I need to make money off of this perspective. Is it?
Oh, like if I don't make money on this, I don't care.
Yeah,
definitely. So it's definitely for me, it's more of a personal obsession, a personal hobby. But since I expose what I do for a living, or what I expose what I do for a hobby is what I'm showing. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, it would be, I wish that I was better at doing car work. And the only way you get better at that is by doing it. You know, I'm just not there yet. So it's still a struggle for me to get things done. And that makes it harder to make money on. It's not as like, you know, the people who do videos about cars and they have a lot of experience, it's enjoyable to watch them because you're seeing somebody who's experienced and proficient do the thing that they're good at. You watch me work on a car, you're watching somebody who has no idea what they're doing, like muddle through it, which I'm sure is not as interesting as somebody with a lot of experience. So I don't think it's something, well, yeah. I don't think it's something that like I can really say I'm trying to make money off of, or I expect to make money off of it to be a big part of, you know, things going forward, unless I just get to put more time into it. And I did think about, you know, just like, is it worth even trying to continue to make videos about the Ghia in the short term, or like Jimmy was saying, I don't remember if it was before or whatever, maybe just like capture little bits along the way and then show major changes every 6 months or once a year or something, and not try to like make a piece of content around this one little thing. Because I think I'm at a point where, you know, like I can't show any more metal work. It's not interesting enough. The next thing to get into is going to be something totally different.
Yeah. Well, maybe when you primer it or attach the frame back to the body, to the wheels, that type of thing.
Yeah.
you know, big movements in time. That's always my advice to anybody that starts making YouTube is you want to film only big changes.
Yeah. So to answer your question, I don't know. But I it's kind of both still.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard to have hobbies. Because
yeah, it is.
When you work for yourself, most of your time goes into the business, and then you have family. You want to make sure like you're doing the work-life balance. Where does a hobby fit into all of that? And then
you know,
first
funny?
Thing we do is like, well, I'll make a video about it, and then it becomes that's how you justify the time.
There's a television show. I don't know what channel it's on or what network it's on, but it's with John Hamm, and he plays a Friends and Family or something like that. Does that ring a bell? There's a new show with John Hamm, and they've been promoting it. And Rachel and I started watching it. And John Hamm is a recent divorcee, and he gets fired. So he just falls, a lot of things start falling apart. But he's in this really high society culture of friend group. And you see him sitting around a lot of the time just watching TV and eating cereal, because now his whole social circle changed. He doesn't have a job, doesn't have his kids and his wife around. And I said to Rachel, I go, this is the average finance bro who's got no hobbies. I guess you maybe go golfing or whatever. But they go, this guy, he just sits around. If he's not interacting with somebody, he's got literally nothing to do except wait for the next interaction with another human. And I said, sad. It's sad that this guy has got no hobbies as a cat, you know, as a human, but as a character on this television show. They try and make it seem like how crummy his life is without any personal interaction. Yeah. But if he had a workshop and a YouTube channel, he'd be busy all the time. He wouldn't need to wait for the next interaction with a human being. Well, so, he would
David,
worry about his
had,
hand planes.
You had the go-kart stuff as a hobby that you kind of kept separate from
I did.
Video stuff for mostly, and then you sold all that off. Have you replaced that?
I've replaced it.
Do you have, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. I have not replaced it, but I think subconsciously I'm looking for something to replace it. I really, really enjoy having all of my time filled all of the time. I don't enjoy not having anything to do. I don't know what my next obsession will be, but I continue to have them.
Pottery. Yeah. I'm going to put it out there as a suggestion.
Yeah, maybe my next obsession doesn't cost me any money.
Sleeping.
Right. I don't know. I just let things come naturally. I feel like the go-kart stuff, I did justify it. I was like, I'm going to make some videos on this, and I did. My engine building video is... I don't know what it's got like 2.5 million views, maybe more. I haven't looked in a while. Wow. That did really good because that information wasn't out there in one place. And so I had that successful video. I had what I've considered a successful 3 or 4 year run. And then it just felt like if you want to be competitive, you got to keep up with things. You got to do a lot of maintenance. You got to do a lot of tear down, rebuild, and it lost its fun. And I'm like, I got into it for fun. If it's not fun anymore, let me sell it. Let me move on to the next thing. And so, I think it's just part of my personality where I go all in on something and then that's it. Like I've had the same things with music and photography and whatever the next thing is going to be.
Mm.
Yeah.
I always tend to let things linger and hang around. Eventually I get back to it. Eventually.
Hmm. Yeah. I have my, what I call my shelf of potential. So there's in the sliding doors in my shop where all the mess is hidden, there's a whole rack of shelves of things that I've got from the Goodwill, other things that are purchased that are future projects. And I think I'm going to get to them right away. And then they sit on the shelf for a long time. And then maybe eventually I'll get to them. But I enjoy having a shelf of potential. And I also dislike it because it takes up space. I don't know if I'll ever get to it. The passion that I had or the idea that I had isn't giving me the spark. The spark has gone away, and maybe it'll come back. I don't know. These are the things that I'm always dealing with. And I am lucky enough where I get to do whatever I want every week. I get to film whatever I want. And if I'm feeling this week, this is what I do. If I'm not, I'll just move on to something else.
Yeah. Well, what about... Okay, so there was a question that we got on... Actually, before we go to that question, you didn't tell us about what you're doing this week. What have you been doing?
I'm finishing up the bedside lamps for the rental. That'll be the next video. I kind of want to get into... We'll just get into the... Well, you didn't talk about what you were working on. So...
I don't know. It doesn't matter. It's not really interesting. Go ahead with the question.
Yeah.
It so always matters, Bob.
We're getting back to working on the rental. I told you guys before the show that we're going to dial it back because the goal was to have it rentable by last November. We missed that. We'll be lucky if we're ready by this November. And the original plan was I was going to make all the furniture and it's going to be a gallery of my work. And then we'll have these packages where you could rent the house, come in to my shop and we make a cutting board or a birdhouse. And it was a little too ambitious. And right now the house is just costing me money. So I'm going to buy some furniture. We're just going to get it usable and just turn it into a normal Airbnb at first. I'll eventually replace the furniture. Then we can do the whole woodworking experience thing. And so getting back to that, I'm making some lamps for there. We're ordering some cabinets and getting back to that. Hopefully this summer it'll be rentable as just a normal Airbnb and not a gallery of my work just yet. So that is what I'm working on.
Yep.
And so to get to the question, last week, Brad from I'm Gonna Make sent me a message, and I'm gonna paraphrase here, but he said, when hobbies become an excuse to brag, do you really love it or do you just love being seen doing it? And how do you get back to purely doing it just for the enjoyment? And that's a tough one because I personally enjoy sharing what I'm doing, even when it was just a hobby. When I was just doing street photography, I love sharing that stuff on Facebook. Or I love, you know, I did a couple art shows back in the day, you know, big public art shows. It almost feels like you want a little bit of human feedback. You get the enjoyment of doing the hobby, but you want to share that because you're really proud of what you've done. But I see where he's coming from with the question where it turns into a brag of like, I collect books. And then it's like, oh, I read 100 books this last year type of thing.
I'm gonna make a guess that this guy belongs to a club and there's somebody there that's really annoying. He's trying to figure out how to navigate through this one annoying person. But, go ahead, Bob.
I mean, I think, yeah, this is something I struggle with a lot because, you know, it's probably obvious, but I don't really like attention. I don't really like...
Says the guy with 4 million YouTube followers.
I know, and that's the weird thing of it. Like, I totally understand that sounds contradictory. But I have a lot of parts of my life that I intentionally do not, like there's a pretty clear wall between what goes out to the world and what stays inside.
Of course.
And that's not all even like safety, privacy kind of stuff. It's just like, I had to find a place in myself, like a certain depth of my world that was like, the wall goes here. And the stuff on the inside of the wall is for people I know. It's for people.
I think we all have that. I mean,
we all have that to some degree.
As open as I am, I still have that as well.
Yeah, and I think it's good.
Yeah,
but I think figuring out where to put those interests, inside or outside that wall, is the thing that the question is about. Mm-hmm. You know, like if you, and David, you said this earlier. Like if you have a hobby that you want to do, the easiest way to justify that hobby is to put it outside the wall, is to put it outside so that you can make a video about it and you justify the time and you justify the costs and you justify the whatever so that other people can at least see it, whether it's for their benefit or whether it's for your benefit. Whatever. That's up to each individual person. But the easiest way to justify that stuff is to put it outside the wall. So deciding with new interests or continued interests or relationships, do you want them to be inside or do you want them to be outside? And that's a hard thing. Like with the car stuff specifically, because we were talking about that earlier, I think if it were inside, I would probably get it done faster, maybe even better than putting it outside. But I don't think I can justify the time, because if it were just on the inside, because I have kids, I have other things I have to do. And so it's, I don't really want to show that stuff off. I don't want to show my failure off. I don't want to show my having to learn on the fly off all the time, especially in the case of that car thing. I want to have a good car. That's the point, yeah. Right? But it's really hard to do without showing it off. And I get that everybody listening is probably like, yeah, whatever, but you get paid to make video. I get the conundrum, trust me. But
what if you were still a programmer? Would you post photos of that on your personal Facebook page?
Nobody's gonna believe me. Personally, I would say I probably wouldn't. This is a big admission. Personally, I would love to disappear, to be known. And I don't mean that like disappear. To only be known by the people I know, to only interact with the people that I run into in life and like build local relationships. And like social media for me as an outlet, as a thing, is very frustrating and very uncomfortable, and it's a part of work. You know what I mean? And so I actually a couple weeks ago I turned my personal Instagram private, and that was not because I was trying to hide anything or because I whatever. There was no particular reason other than, why am I posting pictures here? Is it because I think I found a cool picture and I want to make sure I've got it? Or is it because I want people to know where I am or what I'm doing? Or, you know, I started thinking about that, didn't have a clear answer. And I'm like, well, if it's private, then I don't have to fight that feeling about why I'm posting something. I can post it and I know that it's going to a very limited, very small, very close group of people. And so, like, I wrestle with that a lot about, like, why am I doing this thing, whatever it is? And where do I put those things, inside or outside that wall? I don't know. Yes, Jimmy, for somebody that has a lot of YouTube subscribers, it sounds very stupid and backwards to say that I don't really like being public. But
no, I'm totally picking on you. But like I said, there are certain things, like I've struggled with people in my life that said, hey, post this and post that. And I'm like, no, there's a line. You don't understand. I'm not just this person that just blurts out opinions and facts because I have a platform. There are certain things I don't say and I don't want to say. And I'm not talking about politics. I'm talking about my personal life, because that's just not for public consumption. Yeah. It's not what I've established. It's also not what I want to share. And that's it. And people go, oh, okay, I understand. Just because you see me as a public person and you know me, I'm not going to go share these personal moments because you want everybody to see them. It's not my family photo album. It's my page for the work that I do.
Yeah.
And so there is a line, and I totally get it. Yeah.
Do you, if a family member comes over, do you feel compelled to show them what you're working on?
Yeah. Cause I'm the crazy uncle. Everybody wants to see what I'm doing.
You don't.
No, people come over. I'm like closing up the shop. I'm like, okay, let's be normal life people. And like,
without my shop, I'd have nothing to talk about.
I kind of feel the same way.
Yeah. No, because my place is such a destination. Nobody accidentally stops by here because it's so far off of the beaten path for the people that are in my personal life. So when people come here, they're like, what's new? What's next? What are you doing? Are you going to build a new building? What's the next car you're working on? So that kind of thing happens. And then once that's all over, it's like, okay, what do you want to go eat? It's like, let's go to the milk run. Oh, let's go to the milk run. I heard so much about it.
Oh.
That's typically. It's like people come here.
Delivered.
It's like they just got off an airplane from the moon.
From the
to the moon.
What? So I had something delivered yesterday, and these two guys, and this happens every time I have somebody have to bring something in the house. These two guys had to wheel this. It was a treadmill. They had to wheel it in the door. And right when you walk in the basement door, there's a stormtrooper standing in front of you, and there's an arcade cabinet right next to it. And then when you turn left, there's an R2-D2. And, you know, it's just like, and so they walk in and they set this thing down and they turn around and they go, the guy just stops and he goes, who are you? And I was like, what? And he goes, how do you have an R2-D2? And I was like, oh, I made it. I make stuff. And he just stood there and stared at me, and I felt, and it wasn't like he was totally fine, but I felt so uncomfortable because I immediately had this like, now I have to justify why my house is this way to a complete stranger.
Just tell him you're George Lucas's grandson. That's it.
So I want a contest, you know. Stuff like that. I think, you know, Jimmy, you're talking about people come and they see the thing and you're excited to show them, and you should be. You should be very proud of what you've built and all the work that you've done. And I am proud of the work that I've done, but it just feels weird when I have like a stranger come in and be like, now you have to tell me about why you have these things or why you, you know, like, I don't know. I don't know. I have a hard time with that. Because it's not necessarily bragging to tell people what you do. It's not trying to show off to post a photo to Instagram or something about something that you've done. It's not, you know, if you have a hobby, showing it to other people is not a bad thing. I just have some weird aversion to it where I just, I don't know. I don't know what it is. But yeah, that was a strange example of that exact same thing from yesterday.
Is it feels weird to say I enjoy attention, because I do, and I know it's not cool to say that, but I do enjoy the attention, especially when it's something I'm really passionate about. Like, I really love making things, and I enjoy sharing that with other people. I also feel like the fact that I do create stuff is what makes me interesting. So if you're going to come over to my house, I'm going to talk about what I'm interested in. And what I'm interested in is music and making stuff. So those are going to be our two conversations.
But that's not like I don't think there's anything negative about that. Now, it's different, I think, if you would, like, go to Walmart and stand there and be like, hey, everybody, I'm here. Guess what I do for a living? You know what I mean? That's different. If somebody comes into your space, into your creative area, physically or mentally, whether that's conversation or in your shop, like, they're going to, and they ask you about it, they want to know what you're excited about. And I tell my kids this all the time. If you have trouble talking to somebody, where it's like an awkward spot, ask them questions about themselves. That will make any awkward moment less awkward, because people love all of us love to tell what we care about, love to tell what we're interested in.
Mm-hmm.
And like, so if somebody comes into your space and like asks you about, or comes to your channel, you can even look at it that way. Somebody comes to your YouTube channel, they're by watching, they are asking you about what you care about. Nothing at all wrong with being excited and wanting to share that stuff with the people. I mean, that's why all of us do what we do. So please don't hear anything I'm saying about my weird, like, insecurities or whatever. It's like a negative thing about anybody else showing off their stuff. That's not at all what I mean.
But it does feel like, going back to Brad's question, is like, do I do anything purely for the enjoyment of doing it? And I question myself of like, what if there were no cameras, if there was no Facebook, if there was no Instagram, of course I would still be doing those things.
I truly believe I would be doing exactly what I'm doing with or without a camera.
I love making videos. So the only, I guess you could make a video and never show it to anybody, but I really enjoy making the videos and I enjoy the reaction for it. So I think that there's still a lot of things and the music stuff. I'm really, really into music stuff and I don't really share much of that. Although I make some of the music or most of the music in my videos, I don't really share that. And I do it for the pure enjoyment. I wish I was better. I wish I spent more time learning my scales, but I don't know. It's fun for me to just fidget. So I guess I'm thinking out loud, obviously, but there are things that I do that's just for pure enjoyment. That's just for me, but I don't do a lot.
And I think if you look deeper and you spent more time thinking about that, you could probably find more things, even if those things were organization. You know, right. It doesn't necessarily have to be like you enjoy collecting books because you enjoy having all of that. But it's not like you make videos about, look, I found another book. You may make a video about the books that you've collected. That's one thing. But like you enjoy doing it even if you can't show that fact off on a regular basis. You know what I'm saying?
I did something last weekend that I'm so it excited me to no end where I 3D printed individual holders for every one of my CNC bits that fits into a drawer. And I didn't show it to anybody. I didn't film any of this. I didn't, it was so satisfying and exciting. So all my wood bits are all, they all have a certain color. All the aluminum bits, they have a certain color. All these, I have some foam bits and they're in a different color. And so each one has a little holder. It has the model number of the bits, 3D printed on the thing so I can easily see what bit is what. And it was so satisfying. And it was, it just made, I was like, this was so good. I haven't shared that with anybody. I didn't do an Instagram story. I haven't posted on Instagram in weeks, but, and it just helped. It helped me with my organization. It's going to make the CNC more enjoyable to use when it comes time to use it again. And that was just for me. And that's what I did all weekend. It was just draw and design all these individual little holders. And it was super satisfying.
And I think that's a good example of something that you enjoy. It's also beneficial. And you didn't feel the need to justify it by making a video about it. Even though you could have, it probably would have been an interesting process to see. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I think my point was, like, we can think about the big final product art, you know, building things as those endpoints that, like, this is the thing I'm showing off. And this is, but also things like organization, things like planning, things like dreaming and writing and sketching. We don't necessarily show cooking. There you go. Are things that we don't necessarily show off. But we can still enjoy those. And I think a lot of us probably do enjoy different parts.
You know? Did I tell you guys I've been making bread? I haven't made it in a couple of weeks because I was traveling. I haven't told anybody this. I've been experimenting with making loaves of bread. And I forgot all about it.
Sourdough or what kind of bread?
No, sourdough obviously is a little bit more complicated. I found that out by buying a book on Amazon. And when it showed up, I'm like, sourdough? What do I got? I got to get a thing. I thought maybe it was just a different type of ingredient. But you got to have a, what do they call that? When you're a starter?
Starter.
Yeah. I knew nothing about this until I opened a book that I got on Amazon. But I just Googled one day. Well, I go back a little bit. There's these local farmers that do a lot of my work. My buddy Eli, he's helped me do some of the roads and the property and stuff. And Eli's been in some of my stories. Occasionally I'll mention Eli and they'll be like, is that the guy you were in a truck with? Eli, his whole family business, they make flour. They have a whole flour mill down the road. So I helped him get some of that stuff sorted out once they build this giant flour mill. And so every once in a while, I'm over there and Eli just hands me a 10-pound bag of flour. He's like, here you go. And I'm like, I don't know what to do with this. I'm going to make wheat paste. I don't know what to do with a bag of flour. So there's this 10-pound bag of flour sitting in the kitchen for a year. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to make bread. I'm going to figure it out. So I opened up Google, found a quick recipe, made my first loaf of bread. It was like a brick. like you can cut into it, but like 3 minutes it was good bread and then it turned into a brick.
Did you go to school on the first one?
I went to school in the first five. I cut a couple of slices off and I always text Ryan, I'm like, new loaf, and he comes running down. He's like, this one's a little better than the last one. it's a little bit more moist. And he's like, did you put more salt in it? Like he's like my taster.
Nice.
And then I get a couple of inches out of it, and then I just throw the whole brick out to the birds, and then I try another one. So I started traveling, so I got to get back into it. So, but yeah.
Eating bread is one of my hobbies.
Yeah, that's a struggle.
You should post pictures about that on Instagram.
I know, right?
It has been a struggle because I'm constantly, especially now that I'm older, my metabolism is so slowed down. Yeah. I have to be super conscious about what I eat. Otherwise, I put weight on right away. I'm like struggling with this last 20 pounds I'm trying to lose. And at the same time, I'm like, Rachel's like, you picked the perfect time to learn how to make bread. It comes out of the oven and I'm like, I've already eaten like 3 inches of it. I'm with like butter. I'm like, oh, this is so good. Up, it's starting to harden up. Up, throw it out to the birds. Hmm. And yeah, so that's also the other reason I started traveling, but also just every time I make bread, I eat too much of it. So I've slowed down a little bit because of that.
So, okay, here's a left turn. We've talked a lot over the last 300 years that we've been doing this podcast about products and about like making things that you design it once, you do it once, and then you can sell it. And it's like residual income, right? That just keeps coming in. And we're all, at least Jimmy and I, have been looking for something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, doing things like that, and in my cases, it's courses, it brings in another less active, I won't say passive, but less active source of income that eases some of the production burden on turning your hobbies into videos or into content or whatever, right? Because you have this other money that comes in, so you don't necessarily have to make bread videos. Do you think there's a future there in building up enough of that type of income, wherever it comes from, that other less active income that makes your time more free? Do you think that's realistic for you individually? Or do you think that's just like a pie in the sky? Like, yeah, it would be cool if I had a business that I didn't have to attend to every day.
And well, I could it's have funny. I spoke to somebody. I had a conversation with somebody this morning about their business. Their business is direct to consumer and they make things. And they were asking me my advice. A young gentleman who does stuff is a fan, and we started talking. And we got on the phone this morning, early this morning. He said, can I call you? And I said, I'm too old to do what you do. He's younger, and he's got a very successful website. But he sees what I'm doing, and he wants to do what I'm doing. And in a way, I want to do what he's doing. But at the same time, I'm like, I said, I do not want to pack boxes and lick stamps. And I don't have a support network around me to do that. So I'm very hesitant to try and develop so-called successful products. I mean, I sell stuff on my website. I sell the knives and stuff. But, you know, I think those, for what it's worth, my fans are saturated. No one's rushing. Like, no one's rushing to buy ice picks and knives and stuff anymore. I do have a little trickle. But in general, I haven't made it outside my circle of people that know who I am. And that's why I always say, once you make it outside that circle and people are buying an ice pick because they just think it's a cool thing and they have no idea about me or my network of YouTube videos, that's when I'll be successful. It's always been hard to crack that. And but it is nice to be able to have a product. The best thing is to license a product so somebody else does all the hard work. And that's another level to break through. That's another level of crust to break through. Coming up with the idea, okay, this is a successful concept. Is it going to be a successful product? And then getting it on the shelves or getting it into the hands of people. And then once you realize how difficult it is to manage that and keep it up, then you want to license it. And like I said, that's another level of trying to get somebody to be as passionate about your idea as you are and then run with it and be willing to make part of the money, not all the money, because they're going to give some of it back to you. It's a very delicate balance. It's really hard to find. But at the same time, you could accidentally step in it and all of a sudden you have a successful product. But you have to keep chipping away at trying to find that successful product, all the while tinkering and expecting failure, but you might accidentally. And you know, someone like me, I spent a lifetime trying to develop products. I've had a couple of things that have made me money, of course, but nothing to – I don't have generational wealth from something. And then you meet somebody and you're like, oh, yeah, my grandfather figured out how to wrap a sugar cube, you know, and then they have a a mansion and generational wealth because their father figured out the paper machine to wrap a sugar cube. And you're like, how does that happen? Can that still happen? I mean, I guess it does with apps and the new tech. But if you accidentally happen upon like an Uber, or you accidentally happen upon a like, hey, rent a bedroom in your house, and then now you have Airbnb. You know, these things happen around us every single day.
Yeah.
And it happens to people that are trying. It happens to people that aren't trying that hard. But it would be nice to come up with an app or something that doesn't take a lot of physical.
Yeah.
And get a couple people in to do it all the dirty work for you.
Yeah, I wonder if, you know, to the question of showing off the hobbies, I wonder for a lot of people if, I don't know, this is such a broad thing to say, but people in our space, people who make content, let's just narrow it to that. I wonder if there was another income source that made it easier to have hobbies that didn't have to be content, if people would do that, or if our nature in general is just to share what we do. Is just to show, not necessarily to boast, I'm not saying that, but just to share what we do. Would we do that anyway, even if we didn't have to try to figure out how to turn it into money? You know? I don't know. I wouldn't mind to have a bunch of disposable income and be able to figure that out.
But I think
that is something creator. I think about a lot, is like, you know, if there were fewer could I take longer making things if I didn't feel like I had to make so many things? Could I do a better job at something? Could I design longer, go a step further if the burden of paying for life was not the same as it is? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I wonder about that, and I don't have an answer for that. I don't know how I would get an answer for that, but something to think about.
Hmm.
Being a content creator has rewired my brain and how I approach things. There's no doubt. There's more pressure, but I'm also more well off than I was when I was working for somebody else. So there's the good and the bad. And actually, I kind of like the pressure, but I just think about things differently now, in a good way, I think.
Cool. Well, any other thoughts on showing off, not showing off?
It's funny. When I don't show off at all, I completely forget about them, like the bread. Like, I never mentioned the bread at all. I completely forgot about them. I wonder if there's a couple of other things that I'm not thinking about because I completely forgot it because I don't make a pictorial. I never even took a picture or even a clip of video of me making bread.
You still practicing trumpet?
A little bit. Every once in a while, I have my scales that Ryan, who lives with me, is a very, very accomplished trumpet player. You guys would really have something to talk about. He's the one who wrote the scales out for me, so occasionally I practice the scales. And it's funny, it's like this with mostly anything, if anybody puts some time and energy into an instrument. You practice, so you get frustrated and you think you're really horrible at it. And you are, but for your level of where you're at, you're like, this is never going to work. And then you just randomly pick it up a week later, and suddenly you're so much more advanced than you would have expected to be based on your frustration.
You need to sleep on it.
Yeah, you really do. And I'm at that point now where every once in a while I pick up the trumpet and I just like rock through a couple of the scale that he gave me to practice. And I'm like, I can't believe I remember that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to look for my cheat sheet, which is usually a couple inches away from the trumpet. I always put them down together. It's a cheat sheet he wrote out for me. Yeah, so I still do play with it.
Nice.
I'm not ready for my recital, though.
My youngest son is playing trumpet, and this is his first year, and he was down here. Like, last night, we got home from a movie, and it was pretty late, but he was like, I still got to get my practice in. So he came down here and played in the basement while we were all upstairs, and it's pretty wild how he has progressed a lot in less than a year of learning from school. And he practices at home a couple times a week and stuff. It's not all the time. But I hadn't heard him practice in the house in quite a while. And it was kind of that moment that you just described from my perspective of listening to him, like, oh, wow. Like, yeah. Listen to that.
It's starting to work. Practices.
Yeah, it's finally,
in.
It's like clicking for him. And that's really cool.
Yeah.
But awesome. Well, I'm going to thank our Patreon supporters.
Mm-hmm.
How about that?
Yeah.
Big thank you to everybody over at Patreon that lets us brainstorm and talk and have therapy sessions and all the stuff that we get to do on this show. You make the show possible, and we are super grateful for the support. Absolutely. So big thanks to everybody over there at every level. Everybody is helpful. Everybody is appreciated, and they all get the after show, which is another show after this one. But I always want to shout out our top supporters because they really do go above and beyond. They go past what they need to support us. That's Nick Ryan, Corey Ward, Albers Woodworks, Works by Solo, Chad from Mancrafting, Rich at Lowen Designs, Odin Leathergood, Sean Beckner, Scott at Daddy Yourself DIY, Jeff at the New Janky Workshop, Warren Works, Michael Menigin, Crabtree Creative, Matthias Garnow, and A Pretty Big Deal. Thank you all very, very much. If you want to support the show, if you want to get the after show, if you want to like send us comments and stuff, you can do all that at Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/makingit. Join up at any level. We would be very grateful for the support. I have a cool video that somebody sent me yesterday that I'm going to share. Do you guys have something to share?
I do.
This week? David doesn't have anything?
Mm-mm.
It's like a first time ever.
I know.
You make up for it because you have like three or four every other week. So yeah. Mine is, I think you may have shown me this channel before. I'm not really sure. The guy's name is Scott Eugene. I don't know how to say your last name, Scott. I apologize. But it's making a portable M4 Mac Mini. And he took a Mac Mini, the little tiny Mac, and put a screen and a keyboard on it and like 3D printed this whole thing to put it together. The product is cool. The video is really cool. Like, he did an excellent job of telling a story about making a 3D printed thing. And he does this thing that I'm so jealous that I didn't think of. Man, I love this so much.
Hmm.
He does this thing where he's talking of thinking about the design, and he's sitting at a desk and he's like looking at these pieces, and he says, well, if I do this, then I have to do this. And then he put other versions of himself walking in from behind and leaning over and being like, yeah, but don't forget about the whatever. And yeah, you got to handle this thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which cool. is 100% what my brain does every single time I design anything. And I've never known how to show that in a video.
Jackman,
I always try to like condense it down.
Jackman has done a little bit of that. Where he's like multiple
so
versions
good.
Of himself come in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's just like this internal brain design conversation. But
That's
he does
great.
It in a really slick way. And yeah. It's a good video, and it's he did a great job on the product too. It's very cool.
It's a master class in how good a build video can be, because it's the storytelling's so good. Don't be afraid to borrow that technique, because of course you would put your own spin on it and it would be different. So get inspiration from it and figure out how to make it yours.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe I can give him a shout out too. Yeah. It was a cool idea. And that specifically stuck out to me. Like, dang it. I wish I had done that. Like, oh,
that's, is that kind of like, it's kind of like good. The, Jim Gaffigan comedian where he like does the internal voice on stage.
Oh,
oh
He does it. That's become a big thing for him.
Yeah. Well, anyway, that's mine. Sorry, David, you don't have one. So,
I don't have one. You sent that to me, and I'm like, yeah, I've already watched it. It's so good.
Hmm.
And don't think that it's a 3D printing video, because it's not. It's a,
right.
I wanted to make this thing. I made this thing type of, it's really good.
Hmm.
Another thing that, and I've seen this in a bunch of other videos, this is not new to him, but one thing that did stick out while I was watching this one specifically is how clean the shots are. It's not necessarily that there is less stuff than I have in my space, for sure. But how well crafted each shot was, and there's all of the unnecessary objects are removed from the
shot. Everything
is
with intention.
Yeah. Yeah. And in a, like, and he's in an apartment at a desk, and so that's a little bit different than being in a workshop where you have like tools that just pile up and things you have to have around eventually. But it really got me thinking about trying to just take like another 5 seconds before I hit record on most shots and just being like, what can I move? Mm-hmm. What can I clear out to just simplify so that the focus is on the right thing? Because I can't change the backgrounds. I can't reorganize the shelves every time I want to do a shot, but I can remove objects from the background, from the table, from the, you know, blow the sawdust off, stuff like that, just to, so I think there were several good things that came out of watching that one for me. Anyway.
Yeah. I just sent you guys, I'm going to hopefully I don't ruin his name, Ryan Drapla. Ryan Drapella. He has a channel called Cutting It Close. I just sent you. And make sure, am I saying his channel name right?
Cutting It Close.
Yeah, yeah. Cutting It Close. I always want to call it Cutting Edge. Anyway, Ryan was the speaker at Maker, at Workbench Con this year. And he was great. He's great. He's got a successful Etsy page. And I started my Etsy page recently because of him, because of the influence that he gave me. And I think I might have mentioned this. I don't know. I mentioned this somewhere. But when we met, he called me Mr. DiResta. I was like, please don't call me Mr. DiResta. He's like, nice to meet you, Mr. DiResta. Anyway, good kid. And he's an inspiration to me. We've chatted a little bit since then. And really it's, nice guy. And it's a really, real success story.
It's crazy that you mentioned this channel, because I just came across his channel over the weekend when I was building all my little CNC bit holder 3x3 printed pieces.
Yeah, he sells his, one of his businesses, yeah. He sells bits.
And so I bought bits and they just came in the mail yesterday.
You bought them from him?
I just subscribed to him. Yeah, I bought them directly from him.
Oh, terrific.
And I just subscribed to his channel because there was a gap in my bit collection. And I'm like, man, I wish I had a bit that could do this. And he sells it. So I bought it. So it's funny you mentioned that.
Very, very ambitious kid. He's doing well. And like I said, his TED talk, or whatever you want to call it, at WorkbenchCon was his TED WBC talk was really inspiring to me. And so I started my Etsy page. I haven't sold the thing, and I probably never will. But just getting over the hurdle. And let me tell, I give everybody, just nobody told me this. When you sign up for an Etsy page, the first email you get is from a scammer that says your Etsy page isn't fully set up yet. Follow this link. Takes you to, you got to type in your banking information. And then I went down the whole scam hole, and I was halfway into the scam hole with this link when I went back to the Etsy page, and it says Etsy conversations and then everything else. And I'm like, wait a minute. Why is this message not in the Etsy conversation? But they're telling me my channel will be put on hold unless I sort out this banking issue. And then I was like, I smell a rat. And so this dialogue box pops up and it's like, are you ready to receive a code? And I said, let me see where this goes. And I said, yes. And they said, okay, well, send over a phone number. And then I just closed everything out because they have my phone number already.
I'll tell you a story in the after show.
So I closed it out. And then the next two emails I get on my Etsy page are, your Etsy page is going to be locked out because you haven't finished filling out your banking information. So the first three emails I got on my Etsy page are phishing, phony phishing things. Hmm. And I didn't know enough about the Etsy interface to realize there is a section. If you're going to get conversations with Etsy going, they're only going to be in that conversation section. There you go. That's it.
I almost got scammed last night. I'll tell you in the after show.
Ooh.
Yeah. So that's when I realized, I'm like, because the one thing the internet hasn't figured out, this is the one thing, Bob.
The one thing?
The one thing.
Me?
Website people and programmers haven't figured out is how to type in a phone number on a website. It's like, you go through and you get to the end, it's like red dot. Okay. Put in your phone number. I was like, okay. Oh, I have to put in the parentheses and the comma in the right spot? Or do I not? If I do it, and then you realize there's a space in front of the first parenthesis, and then you get the red dot. It's like,
did you say comma? Do you have a comma in your phone number?
No, I meant to say parentheses and a dash. Maybe that's the problem. I keep putting a comma.
Back in my day.
Yeah. Yeah.
I type in Franklin 4, 654, and it doesn't work. where I grew up, this is not even a joke, where I grew up, the like on the dial, when I was a little kid, on the dial, the phone number was Franklin 4 and then three numbers. And I always say to my mother, what is Franklin 4? She's like, oh, back in the day, you'd have to have this abbreviation for the beginning of a phone number.
Yeah.
So Franklin 4 and then the next three or four numbers.
So, there's a pad of paper here somewhere that was my grandfather's when he, I don't know when this was, long time ago. And it had his dental practice name on it and phone, and then it had a 4-digit number. And I remember growing up and being like, what in the world? And all the phone numbers were 4 digits because they were localized to a little.
And then I think something to the effect of, people could correct the story information, but those four became not enough numbers. And so they put the prefix, and the prefix was the town you're in. Franklin was like, you know, like the overall town, Franklin 4 or Franklin 5, or these were the prefixes. And that's how numbers started to gather more phone numbers, more
and
digits.
They added area codes for the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Country codes. Yeah. I have another suggestion here since you didn't have one, David. I don't know how to say this guy's last name. Andy Didorosi. Sorry, Andy. I don't know. He bought an abandoned car factory.
Yes, I follow him. Yeah, I didn't know his name, but I do. I know his
name. In Detroit. And he bought it like a while ago. I don't even understand. He must have
stuff in it. There's like things.
I don't even get this, but he bought this giant thing. He has tons of cars. He used to be a racer of some sort or something. So maybe he, I don't know. There's a ton of old cars in there. He's got like robot arms. He's got all of this crazy stuff, and he's trying to rebuild this factory and start making cars.
What? How do you do that?
I don't know. It's really cool. So this one, he has a bunch of videos about different things over the years, but now he's starting to do long form. And I think this video was kind of the kickoff for the, you know, let's make longer videos about how we're going to get this thing up and running.
Send a link
again
to the chat, Bob.
Yeah, I will. And I'll put a link in the show notes as well. It's really cool. And I applaud this guy for, I don't know how he's doing it, but it's very cool.
This is crazy.
And like the factory, I get he's making it a car factory. It used to be like an envelope factory or something like that. So it has this crazy giant screen printer thing and like a paper shear. And he has all these weird big tools that he's using for different. Anyway, it's worth watching. Pretty cool.
All right.
You guys got anything else for this week? That's it.
More noises?
We got complaints about the noises, Jimmy. You said you weren't going to do it anymore.
I'm only going to do it in the
afternoon. I'm going to take his place.
Yeah. Nobody's complained about your noises yet, David. Mm. All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Bye. I'm not going to say I love you.
Oh, I hurt Jimmy's feelings.
I did say that.